Coming to you from the Alamo Draft House in Kansas City, it's the Tim and Lowe Show.
Here we go, here we go. Another episode of the Tim and Lowe Show. I'm your host, Tim English, and I'm here with Lonita Cook.
And once again. I'm here, barely.
Barely here today. We were off last week, so it's a little bit of a rough start getting back going again. But we need to get going because we have a lot of crazy stuff to talk about. A, today. We've got a good show today.
Yes, we do.
And we got a crazy week ahead to get rid of next week's big show,
Woo!
Which is a huge show for the Tim and Lowe era. So we'll talk about more about that here in a bit.
That's right.
But right now we're joined by, as you can hear, we have two special guests with us today. Filmmaker Patrick Ray is with us. Patrick,
howdy. Glad to be here.
Thanks for joining us. And you've got a little companion with you today.
I got my daughter, my one-year-old daughter, Violet. She will be making lots of comments over the course of the show.
Well, good. Yeah. I'm down with
I'm going to interview her.
Good.
It would be very interesting.
All right. So, yeah, we're going to talk a lot of things. You know, we missed last week, so we're going to talk about the Oscars.
Yeah, let's talk about the Oscars.
We're
going to
do our spring movie preview today.
I owe you a chocolate cake. I'll say it right out the gate.
Yep. We're going to do Comic-Con stuff.
Comic-Con. We're going to talk Comic-Con.
And
we're going to talk...
Towards the end, we're going to talk about filmmaker Harold Ramis.
Yes, we are going to talk filmmaker...
He passed away 2 weeks ago.
2 weeks ago, yeah. On the day we recorded our last
show. Yeah, and the crazy thing about that is my wife had texted me.
During the show?
Like, right at the end. I knew, looking by the time, I was like, she's probably on her lunch. And so
just wants to say hi.
I totally ignored it. You know,
and it was
I didn't
pertinent
want to go,
information.
It was. It was something that would have been like, ooh, we have breaking information here.
That's folks. Right. Our
course,
producer
again,
in the cosmos.
We don't post for a few days, so it wouldn't have been breaking information then. But either way, I'd still like to talk about it, even though
I would love to
past.
Talk about it. I mean, so. He deserves more than just a conversation, but
absolutely.
A conversation
you're right.
We will have.
You're right.
And we'll also talk about upcoming spring movies.
Yep, spring movie preview.
Spring movie preview. Anything that you're
excited? Captain America.
Captain America.
Yep.
Yeah.
There's a couple on here.
And I want to talk. No, I'm you know, because we're talking about Captain America,
yeah.
And then there's the that comic book movie that just got recast with Michael B. Jordan.
Yeah, for the Fantastic Four.
Yeah, so the guy that's playing Captain America used to be in that, playing that role.
Right.
Right? So what is he, like, coming up so he can't do both superheroes? What's happening?
Yeah, he just, you know, that's... the Fantastic Four is owned by Fox as opposed to Disney and Marvel Studios. So, yeah.
Oh, so he's
they're recasting.
Contracts.
They're recasting all those roles and rebooting those heroes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because if they don't, then they lose the rights to Marvel Studios, and then Marvel Studios would do it correctly.
Right.
So everybody else is going to keep wasting everybody's time with...
They will come correct.
Versions. So,
all right,
yeah.
Well, then let's start with our Oscar wrap-up. Let's be brief about it because we're a week behind. Thank you, Snow.
Yeah, we got delayed last week.
And I don't mean the 90s rapper when I say that.
So, Informer?
I miss that guy.
Yeah. So, Oscars, what did you think?
I thought it was a great broadcast. I've kind of watched. I enjoyed Jared Leto's speech. He won, as you predicted.
Yeah.
Nobody.
Well, I don't think it was so much of a prediction. I think it was pretty obvious. I thought that was the thing with the show was all those winners. Was
the only one
winners.
That threw me was screenplay, original screenplay. That one threw
I,
me.
I
see it coming.
What,
for her, right?
Yeah.
See, that's who I thought was going to win.
Really? Yeah, that's who I predicted, too. Now, I will say my tier two categories, I think I got most of those right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, in my predictions. So,
yeah,
but those
I thought it was a good show, though.
Premium categories, I wanted Leo to get it.
Well, and that's the thing is, you know, we had talked with Michelle before the show when I said... I think when I said Jared Leto was going to win, she was like, really? And I was like, well, it's not necessarily who I would want to win, yeah, but it's who I think is going to win. It's who I think the Academy is going
to
pick.
Yeah, I went with who I wanted to win.
Right.
Here's the thing. Now that the Oscars are over, and it might be okay for me to say, I'm not a huge fan of the Academy Awards.
What was that?
Why? Because, you know, I'm not a fan of films like 12 Years a Slave or Dallas Buyers Club, but those are clear Oscar faves.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and the subject matter is all right for me, but then this whole idea, like it seems like you can be a perceived straight actor and play gay, play like you have AIDS, throw in a little bit of drug abuse, and there
alcoholism,
you go.
It always helps to be an alcoholic.
Yeah, and there's your Oscar. And I'm just like, you know.
Well, and I agree. Yeah, that's the thing, you know, 12 Years a Slave this year. I mean, that's what I said. It's a movie that's it's tailor-made. I mean, it's just built for it, you know.
Tailor-made.
It's, Lincoln, I thought, last year, and I mean, it failed to win, I think, anything except for Best Actor.
Yeah. I think it might have won.
But it was another movie that it was totally just ramped up for a big Oscar push, and it got the most nominations last year. But so what would you rather see nominated
in general?
Yeah, sure. Well,
Las Vegas.
I loved Las Vegas.
I like Las Vegas.
I mean, but
how would you change the Academy's way of nominating, or not even, I'm not talking about the process, what would you rather see nominated instead of some of these movies?
Well, That's a good question, because I am conditioned, like everybody else, to understand what the Academy enjoys. And I like a good sentimental, you know, story. I like phenomenal acting. I like something that leaves you with an understanding of the human condition, a perspective of history, a new perspective on history. You know, I like things that sit with you. And I'm not saying that these movies aren't good movies, because they are, yes, the best made movies.
Sure.
But for me, when Tom Hanks won for Philadelphia, it was awesome, you know, and he was amazing in that movie. But when he won for Forrest Gump, that was something to me. That was like,
sure, it was a movie you identified
with. It's a popcorn movie on top of being an Oscar qualifying movie.
Exactly.
You know, one thing I thought, like last year, I really thought the Academy should have made a move and nominated Avengers the previous year, because A, it was like the third highest grossing movie of all time, and B, it was one of the most best reviewed movies
of the year. Yeah, it was like in the 90 percentile on
Rotten
Tomatoes.
Right, and so I think that's where you can kind of draw a line, is like, how can you say this wasn't one of the best movies when it was not only a box office success, but well-liked across the board.
Right.
By fans and critics.
But I think you do get into that, but it's a comic book movie, so it's not a good movie.
Yeah, The Dark Knight was as close as it was going to get, and they didn't nominate it,
And even they kind of, I thought, tried to do The Dark Knight Rises with an eye towards getting nominated for an Academy Award instead of just making a good final installment of that.
Right. And that's what I'm saying there. You know, if you're working within a certain genre, it feels like you know you're not going to get an Oscar nomination. Sure. But then you're Oscar-worthy artist,
and like
Joss Whedon.
Like
I would love
one.
For Joss Whedon to get an Oscar for the work that he does, but because of the genre that he works in,
he'll be one of those guys. They'll give him an honorary Oscar, like they did Alfred Hitchcock. Hitchcock never won an Oscar.
That's ridiculous.
Dude's one of the greatest, if not the greatest, filmmakers of all time.
Violet is in the background putting her thing down.
She thinks Joss Whedon needs an Oscar as well.
Yeah. Exactly.
She has seen The Avengers. I'm not sure she remembers any of it, but she saw it.
Remember before the Oscars, I talked a lot about Sam Rockwell for way, way back. I'd love to see more, you know, nominees like that, because I went through the voting process this year with the Kansas City Film Critics Circle.
Right.
It was the first time I went through it. But, so you get the movies sent to you by the studios for screening purposes, stuff like this. Mm-hmm. And the whole time, they're telling you what to vote for. I mean, it's kind of one of those where you just kind of know when it comes down to it, well, this will get nominated, this will get nominated. It's not even really so much a choice as it is just narrowing down what the studios have said, okay, these are the movies that we're pushing out for the Oscars. So I don't know, you know, any other good movies.
Sure. I think Gravity was definitely the most mainstream movie that was nominated this year.
Agreed.
Because it, I mean, it broke the $200 million mark and was wildly
it was appropriate for all the new theaters like the IMAX and the Prime and all of that stuff. It was appropriate for that experience.
I just think it's interesting how like the cat when you look at the movies that are nominated, just the difference of the movies. Like you got Gravity and then you have like Philomena.
Right.
It's like those are I can't compare those movies.
Right. Yeah, that's you always get that. Well, which one's better? And it's like they're not
they always throw in one in there too that's like an oddball choice and you're like, wow, I didn't see that one coming and I mean, I was actually surprised The Butler didn't get any nominations.
I was too.
Yeah, I was surprised too.
No, I did not like the movie at all, to be honest with you. I thought the movie was really boring. But I was kind of surprised because it was really critically acclaimed and it did really well at the box office. And then it just kind of...
Yeah, and then you have your surprise performance by Oprah Winfrey. I was surprised. Yeah. I mean, I don't know why I was surprised, because if we look at her in The Color Purple, she was one of the most...
She just doesn't do that
characters.
Many roles. So it's like whenever she shows up every 10 years, you're like, oh.
Oh, my God. Well, I mean,
it's like,
Oprah.
It's like the, you know... TV awards, the Emmys or something, whenever like a Hollywood actor does a guest spot on a show, he's going to get nominated and probably going to win because they want to get him in there to that show to get him on TV.
Right, exactly.
You know, it's all a big cycle. It's a machine. So.
Yeah.
All right. So
did you really love Nebraska?
I didn't love it. I liked it. I enjoyed it for what it was. I mean, I'm not going to go and run out and say, hey, guys, let's all sit around and watch
it. I'll admit I had a hard time watching it.
Yeah.
Because I grew up in Nebraska.
No.
Oh, that's right.
Being from a small town in Nebraska, I'm like, I know all these characters. You know, like I've seen these people.
As a critic, right, you know, during that time you're watching that, you're not really watching it for entertainment at that point.
No.
You're watching it because you've heard Bruce Dern is great in the movie.
Right.
So, because it's Alexander Payne. So
yeah, right.
You know. So it's like you watch the movies with a completely different frame of mind, you know.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, it's kind of the weird thing, you know, when you go
Payne's style is interesting too. I was actually I interned on an election when I was 17 and I just remember I thought it was just a typical high school movie, and then they gave me the sides for the script, and I looked at it, I'm like, oh my God, this movie's R-rated, holy crap. And I do enjoy his style. It's just, you know.
Well, I mean, Will Forte, I really love him. But the thing is I preferred his performance in That's My Boy.
Or MacGruber.
Right.
I love MacGruber.
See, that's just because of your mind and where Lanita's brain goes.
He was really good. He was really good in Nebraska. I was actually really surprised because he was so not funny. And that's a stretch for him because he's a funny guy.
He is a funny guy.
I thought Stacy Keach was really good in that movie.
Yeah, I did too. I like
that dude. Yeah, I was afraid. Yeah.
Whenever he kind of shows up out of nowhere every now and then because he was in American History X and stuff, and you're like,
that's right.
I love that guy.
Yes, he's got a face that could be equally as kind as it is
menacing.
Yes, great word. Yes.
So, all right. So that was the Oscars. You are right with it. Do you have anything else to say about?
Only
the
thing
Oscars?
I want to say is the fashion was very lovely. Will Smith looked like $14 million.
Did you have any? Besides the way some of these guys looked, like Will Smith.
No, I mean, and I'm
like his suit.
Yeah, his suit. I'm not just
Will
saying
Smith
he was
looks
fine.
Good. I mean, that's one of those guys. He always knows how to.
But sometimes he opts for you know, just kind of classic look. But this time he had on like some stuff. I don't know men's fashion very well.
It's called clothes.
I really enjoyed like Lupita's speech. I like when you can see somebody's speech and you can tell that they're honestly overwhelmed by the moment. For the people who you can tell they're just like, oh, here we go again with another speech. You know,
I thought Kate Blanchett's speech was the only one that was truly lucid. Like very like straightforward to the point.
And right.
You could tell she had not been drinking all night.
Right. And her point was also to illuminate the art that's happening in Australia, which I thought was a good moment to take and use that moment for the benefit commerce.
And I also liked how Bill Murray mentioned Harold
that
Ramis.
Was awesome. That was touching. How he touching. Threw him out there as another nominee. Yeah, that was touching. Yeah, that was a good moment. Then there was the, trying to think which award these guys, I think they were the outstanding short film or the outstanding.
Yeah, who won for that?
One that won best animated film actually won in Omaha this weekend as well. Was that the Gallant Captain or something like that?
The guy that came up and his hand was just shaking. He was trying to read his, you know, I like moments like that where you can tell people are just completely overwhelmed.
When they're genuinely,
you know, you can really just tell that. You know.
Yeah, because some of these guys are just such big stars and they have so much power to wield. When they win their Oscar, it's like, yeah, I put my thing on it. Yeah. I mean, you know, and it's like, okay.
Yeah, the pressure's all off of them. And,
yeah.
You know.
But I liked, here's the thing, I liked Matthew McConaughey because he is kind of goofy. He has always, impressed me as goofy. Mm-hmm. And he was exactly that way during his speech. You know, he didn't transform into like a hoity-toity, right. I've got an Oscar, I am accepted now. He was like, dudes, I'm still from the South, you know, I still have these dimples. So I really liked him. I thought he was very personable.
All right. The thing was, you know, we talk about lack of surprises. I also like when somebody wins that you just
didn't see coming.
Right. And all of these, 12 Years a Slave, Alfonso Cuarón, I figured it was going to go either or. Mm-hmm. Like if Gravity won best picture, Steve McQueen was going to get best director, and it went vice versa. I kind of figured that's the way that would happen. Animated movie, once Frozen was released, that was over, you know, back in December. I was kind of surprised, I think, by the best documentary, 20 Feet from Stardom.
Yeah, because I saw The Act of Killing, and I thought that was clearly going to win.
And it's pretty much won everything else.
Yeah, and it's disturbing.
Well, I mean, sometimes I think that there's some emotional politics happening because I know that one of the producers on 12 Feet from Stardom died like a month before its Sundance screening. And that's been a part of...
Well, and also the story is kind of uplifting. You know what I'm saying? Right, there is nothing uplifting about The Act of Killing.
And a lot of people shied away from seeing it because of the subject matter.
And you can tell that the crew, because half the crew is listed as anonymous. Yeah. It's like, you know, first AD anonymous.
Wow.
It's really interesting. And so I think that the tone of that film was just, pushing people away, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. 12 Feet from Stardom.
20 feet.
Oh, it's 20 feet.
Yeah.
They're that far away from Stardom?
Another 8 feet.
Like, well, that doesn't seem that far.
I mean, you know, and I saw it when it premiered at Sundance the year before, and I was so what is that? Lisa Fisher is in it. Mm-hmm. And I was a huge fan of her song, How Can I Ease the Pain, and knew that she had, you know, done background vocals for Luther Vandross, who is the Pavarotti of soul, you know. And they all came and they sang. I mean, it's just an amazing experience in itself. But like you said, it's uplifting and it's music.
Yeah, it's got kind of a good message as opposed to Act of Killing, which has a message. It's just, you know,
leave the theater feeling.
I had to watch, follow it up with like The Little Mermaid or something.
At least things are better now. You know, it's that stuff's still going to keep going on and happening. Yeah. And who's going to do it? You know, I hosted a screening at here not too long ago, and one of the questions was, well, how has this documentary changed? What's happened is like, that's not going to change anything. Who's going to do anything about it? You know what I mean? So. All right. So Oscars over, award season's over. I'm kind of glad I'm ready to get into some spring and summer movies and not.
Let's do it.
Not have to think about stuff and just kind of get some entertainment, you know? Be kind of cool. So let's see. What did you, let's do news. News? Good?
News?
Yeah, news. 300 was number 300. One at the box office this weekend. $45 million.
Shocking.
Wow. It should be.
When did the first one come out? 2007?
I think it was 7 years ago. Was it?
Yeah, 2007. Yeah. It's like so maybe there's hope for Sin City 2.
There's I just saw the trailer for that the other day.
Oh
man. Well, 300. I am kind of on the fence in terms of my general interest in war movies and Greek history films. You know, I kind of like it. Like growing up, I loved watching like Hercules and stuff like that, but it was more mythological. And so when the first 300 came out, it took me a while to watch it.
Right.
And, you know, there was the whole hoopla over Gerard Butler and how awesome looking he is. And I was just kind of like, meh, you know.
okay.
So
I prefer Lena Headey.
right. And she's gorgeous. And she returns in the sequel. But as a film critic, I said, oh, people are going to want to know if this is a great sequel. So I went to see it, and I actually had a great time. Now, I did leave feeling a sadness. They don't hold back on the carnage. But the
it's cartoony, though, you know?
It is cartoony. Yeah, you know. But because of the backstory of the villain, you hope that it ends differently, or I hoped that it would end differently, but you know that it can't. And for somebody like me, my heart was broken. It was just really sad, you know, but wonderful. And the thing that surprised me is it was kind of funny. You know,
really?
And it wasn't kind of in a cheap shot kind of way, but it was.
Is it a little bit more female driven than the first movie? Like, is it because it seems to me when I see the commercials, I see a lot of Eva Green with a sword.
Well, she's the villain.
Okay.
And
is Lena Headey the heroine, or is it just she's?
She's a part of the good guys. There's a team. Okay. See, they are trying to unite Greece.
I see.
Yeah. So, is there going to be a third one?
In my estimation,
I don't know.
There's money to be made. They made money off this one, I think.
Yeah.
So
there's money to be made,
and they did it 7 years after the first one, which is crazy.
It didn't quite do as well as the first one did at its opening weekend,
but it's shockingly well for something they waited that long.
In March, you know, movie's coming out in March right now.
But 300 visually was one of those movies that kind of woke us up and it touched us. Right. And so I think that they could wait. You know what I mean? Because who's the big dude? The gold big dude?
He's in the first movie.
He's in the first movie. And he's in the second one, but for no reason at all.
Who's that? Is that Xerxes? I don't remember.
Yeah. I know. I always think of that South Park episode. I'm sorry.
All right.
We don't have to talk about that.
300 was number one, $45 million. Mr. Peabody was number two at the box office.
Mr. Peabody was number two,
but it'll stick around. It won't. It'll stick around.
Yeah, it should stick around.
Anybody who was going to see 300 saw it.
Yeah,
probably even like Friday night. You know, Mr. Peabody, how'd you like that? I thought it was a good.
How'd your kids like it?
They liked it. You know, I liked it, and I gave it a positive review because I liked that it at least tried to teach kids something.
Yeah,
I liked how whenever Peabody was explaining, you know, you would see all the little steps, you know, and I think a lot of it is probably going to go over kids' heads, but I think if anything comes out of it, hopefully it'll make kids more interested in learning just anything, even if it's learning something about ancient Greece or Italy or Leonardo da Vinci, any of the historical characters or, events that happen in it, you know. I think, you know, for a lot of movies don't even try. Even like the Pixar movies, you know, they have good heart.
Yeah.
But, you know, I do like trying to put something in a kid's brain rather than just eye candy. So that's why I liked it.
I agree. I thought that it was the ultimate in edutainment. I do think that some of it will be over kids' heads.
All the stuff about time travel and why it works and why it doesn't and all that stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's going to go over kids' heads. And most, you know, and, but the thing is most kids probably don't realize they learned something.
Right.
Like, wow.
Because then it was so awesome.
Go home and be like, wow, the ancient Greece, you know, and they'll have all these blah, 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 you know.
They will ask questions. They will, and I think it's so entertaining, they'll want more.
Yeah.
And I think that's so good. It was smart. It was more than smart. It was actually intelligent.
Sure.
And it was witty. And I thought that it talks about more serious themes like education,
yeah,
prejudice, and bullying. That was another thing that I enjoyed about it. And for me,
without having an overbearing message about it, without being preachy about
it, wasn't preachy so, you know, at all. It was absolutely shown and not told.
Right.
But one thing that stuck with me when I was watching it is that it could serve as a metaphor for the challenges that unconventional couples or parents have in the adoption process, particularly gay couples.
Sure.
That's what I kept feeling, is that it was a metaphor for that.
Yeah, I think you're probably right about that. I think it's easy, you know, and probably even a good idea for them to use these movies to kind of introduce ideas like that, so that when these kids are faced with situations like that, where, you know, I have two mommies, or I have two daddies, or,
yeah,
you know, what, you know, my mom's, you know, black, my dad's white,
exactly,
whatever it is.
I went to high school with a girl who had a crush on me, and finally she was just like, you know what, I'm not gay. And I was like, then why are you going after girls? And she's like, because my moms are gay. And I thought that that's
what you're supposed to do.
What you were supposed to do.
Yeah, it is.
And it was, that's kind of how I thought when Sherman is like, I'm not a dog. You know, it's like, my dad's a dog, mm-hmm, you know, but I'm a boy, you know.
Right.
And so I thought it was really, it could be a really great way to discuss that subject matter with your children if you are gay parents, and your children are being bullied because you are gay parents.
Well, you're right, because that stuff's going to be there.
Yeah.
Your kids are going to face these things in their life when they go to school or not out in the real world. So pretending they're not there and not talking to them about it because it makes you uncomfortable as a parent, that's not the way to handle it, because, you know, your kids are going to have a hard time if they don't understand these things later,
exactly,
on. So, yeah. So, yeah, you learn a little bit something with Mr. Peabody. So
it's great.
If you're listening, you have kids, take your kids to see it. So, all right. One more tidbit of news that we started talking about before was the near casting. Apparently, they are close to casting somebody for Star Wars Episode 7. Adam Driver, who was in Girls on HBO,
yes,
and he was just recently in Inside Llewyn Davis, is nearing, quote, a deal to play the film's...
He's on the veil.
...villain. Lead villain, one of the villains, a villain somehow, and he's being compared to a... Darth Vader-esque type, so he'll be a fallen Jedi, maybe, or someone who's gone bad somewhere under the training of Luke Skywalker. Are you excited about Star Wars? Because I'm sitting,
yes,
here right now, and I've got like a straight face, but inside my mind is just like, yeah, bring it on!
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Bring it on. It's like fist pumping.
I can't wait. I'm so excited. I have... You haven't seen my home office.
I've only seen the work office.
I have a Darth Vader mug.
Yeah,
any other.
Well, I mean, I try to, you know, play a little bit when I run into somebody who has a couple lightsabers, but other than that, you know, now if they brought James Earl Jones back, then I would be excited.
Well, yeah, and there's just, I don't know if they'll figure out any way to do any kind of Darth Vader reference. I really hope not. I hope, you know, the Darth Vader is gone. I mean, they could always, I suppose, from a storytelling, they could bring back somebody
in
Darth
Vader.
I'm ready
for something different.
You're right. That's what I want to see. No more Death Stars. No more what worked before. Use the chemistry and all that,
yeah,
and just in the imagination.
Right.
Not just make references to all the other movies.
Sure.
Like, hey, remember, could you like
Which is going
to
be hard when they have the original cast in this one. I think they said they decided to tailor the script more towards the original cast. because the original writer was let go, and then J.J. Abrams
right.
and
Michael Arndt, right?
Yeah.
And when you say the original cast, do you mean from the 80s movies? Yeah, the prequels.
They're bringing back Harrison Ford Carrie Fisher and Mark Hamill.
Yeah.
And Billy Dee. I mean, they've all kind of said, yeah, I think we're coming back, but there hasn't been anything official.
Okay, so when I said bring back James Earl Jones...
I don't think it's possible.
For the voice and how just badass that all was. But they're really bringing back all those old people.
It'll be 30 years later, and it'll be about their children and how new threats to the galaxy, stuff like that.
That's kind of cool.
But yeah, J.J. Abrams took over, and they had Michael Arndt.
Then Lawrence Kasdan came back, and...
And, you know, it's totally typical. When a director like J.J. takes over, he's always known to kind of write his own stuff.
Sure.
So that's going to happen.
And he takes weird chances with casting, so I trust him. You know, I think the Adam Driver thing, when I saw that, I was like, well, that's out of left field.
Sure.
But I'm excited about it. You know, it wasn't like he went for the typical.
Right. You're kind of on board.
The rumor has it that Fassbender was up for that part.
Hugo Weaving was another one. And guys that are just always kind of bad guys.
The guys are faces are molded to look evil.
Right.
And this guy, he looks kind of like, you know, I don't know.
And the thing
kind of nerdy, yeah.
The thing about the other movies, when those came out, nobody knew who Harrison Ford was.
Right.
You know, they weren't movie stars then. You know,
but movies were different then.
Sure.
You know, and the way that we worked with actors and presented movies, you know, now directors and actors are stars. They are the selling point of movies. You know, back then, the story was the selling point. You know, the imagination, the wonder of the movie was the selling point. Now, you know, is the dude fine enough? You know, is he going to bring enough 13-year-old girls to the theater?
I saw the new Transformers trailer, which they should call Transformers the same thing over again.
It does look the same.
But, like, I laughed when I saw Mark Wahlberg's daughter. He's living on a farm. He's got no money. And then his daughter's there, and she's like a supermodel.
Yeah.
Right.
Like,
yeah,
no way.
That looks silly. Yeah, you're right. The whole Mark Wahlberg doing his dumbfounded acting.
Well, he's just replacing Shia LaBeouf.
Yeah,
and it's just the same thing, except he's running from explosions and slow-mo.
I would have been better off. I think something like Transformers is best to hand off to different directors to give.
Yeah.
New perspective and new vision. I think that's why J.J. Abrams works for Star Wars, because George Lucas is a great creator. Not so much a writer and director. So to have us in another filmmaker's hands to give a completely new vision, I think, is what it needs.
Which is what they should have done with the prequels.
You know, they lost me on the first Transformers when they didn't use the song.
Yeah, that was important too. That's where they lost you.
My dad took me to the 1986
not on Optimus Prime
movie.
Having lips. It was the song.
My dad took me to the 1986 movie when I was 6 years old, and I still think that's the best one.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. You know, and here's the thing. It pisses me off, but I'm also looking forward to them just come on, bring the Thundercats, give me Voltron.
Silverhawks.
All day long. Bring it on.
They're supposed to be doing another He-Man, too, but
yeah,
they keep bringing it up every now and then.
Keep saying
new director involved.
Right.
Yeah.
So, all right. So, you know, moving on.
Moving on.
We'll talk more about Star Wars later.
Yes, we will. We will have plenty of time.
I could do a couple more hours of this.
When something's official. It's, you know, we said before, it's supposed to start filming here in April, I think. So
yeah, first part of May, I think, is what
right.
you said. So
when you say filming here, you mean just filming here in time, not here in Kansas City.
Right, not here, yeah. They're filming in England.
That would be news to me. I mean, oh, my God.
Yeah.
Sweetheart.
I'd be going a little bit more geek out crazy
right.
if it was that imminent. So... That close.
Anywhere where there's a green screen.
So, here in a moment, we're going to talk with Patrick about his movies. But
his movies and his work, which includes something we've done together.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
First, though, we've got kind of a cool show coming up next week.
Yes,
we're going to be doing a show, for those of you listening, at Planet Comic Con. At Bartle Hall in Kansas City.
March 14th through 16th.
14th through the 16th. And it's at Bartle Hall down there, and we're going to have a lot of fun. We're going to do a show right from the main floor. Mm. We're going to be starting at about 11:30
a.m.
And we'll kind of go up till about 3:30. We'll take a break in there somewhere. You know. But we're going to have a fun show. We're going to try to get a lot of the guests. They've got a lot of cool people. They're going to be there. Lee Majors, the $6 million band.
Awesome.
So well, how much would he be worth these days? Would he be like the $1 trillion man now?
Yeah, exactly.
Inflation.
Inflation.
Because it's just like $6
million. Huh. I'll buy you.
Yeah. So Jewel... I'm not sure how to say her name. State, I think it is. She's from Firefly. Yeah. She was the mechanic.
Oh, yeah.
So she's going to be there. Joss Whedon.
Joss Whedon. Everybody knows that I love Joss Whedon. Everybody who knows me personally knows that I love Joss Whedon. I loved The Golden Girls. His father worked on that. And I love Dick Van Dyke. And his grandfather worked on that. He comes from a royal lineage.
Hollywood television royalty.
That's right.
He's awesome. No, I love Joss Whedon. I wish he was going to be there. That'd be great.
Oh, my goodness.
They'd bring down the house, huh?
I would do nothing.
Yeah, people would flock from all over.
Joss Whedon.
So, but they've got a cool lineup. John Ratzenberger, Margot Kidder, William Shatner's going to be there on Sunday.
That's
Will Wheaton's going to be there. Jonathan Frakes, LeVar Burton, Brent Spiner, Michael Dorn, Gates McFadden. I mean, tons of people from Star Trek. So if you're a Star Trek fan, get out to Planet Comic Con.
That's right.
Chad Coleman from Walking Dead was supposed to be there. He's not going to be there. I'm so disappointed. Tyrese.
Well, I haven't seen Walking Dead just yet. So I'm not a zombie person.
I know. Just watch it so we can talk about it. No.
No.
Not a Walking Dead. You know, I really liked early Walking Dead. I've kind of, last night's episode, I just, like, it's just boring. It's just.
Yeah.
I'm not sure how much further you can go with that.
It's an amazing renaissance of horror television right now, where every show is almost like a horror show. You got The Following, you got Hannibal, you got Vampire Diaries, you've got, you know, so many shows. And so I had to choose, and I chose True Blood.
Oh.
But. That's coming to an end, and I watch The Following now. So
True Blood lost me after the second season.
Yeah, that's about when I stopped watching.
I mean, people who know me, I am pro sex, but with the orgy and the Minotaur and all of that.
How did it not hook you? Come on.
What is happening?
That's when I got... I watched Game of Thrones, too, as well. I've seen all three seasons of Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
And I'm looking forward. That's coming back in a month or so.
Awesome.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that. I think the Khaleesi is a fantastic character. And so
she's playing in the new Terminator.
Right. I'm not sure about that one. I don't, you know.
The new Terminator?
Yeah.
Because is it a reboot or is
they
it
say a, it's a reboot it, slash sequel slash.
That's kind of going over the same events again.
I am going to throw up. What is this Terminator talk?
Oh, yeah. They're remaking it. She's playing Sarah Connor. Do you know who she is?
She's the blonde on the real blonde character on Game of Thrones. You don't care.
Emily Clark is here. Let me pull up a picture of her.
Yeah, let's do that.
Clark. Yeah, she plays Daenerys on Game of Thrones. She's one of the big. Yeah, she's a cutie.
Oh yeah, she's a cutie super patootie. Cute.
First season, she did a lot of nudity, and then she just stopped.
Yeah.
Yeah, because she's super cute.
I think
she doesn't need to.
She's like, my pay grade went up, so I'm not doing.
So she's playing Sarah Connor.
Sarah Connor came up.
Dude playing.
I'm sorry, I can't get the bad taste of Die Hard 5 out of my mouth.
Man, who's he playing? He's not playing Kyle Reese.
He is playing Kyle Reese, and also he was
the dude from the future.
Yeah,
the Savior's father.
Is being played by the guy that played Bruce Willis's kid. And
ironically, he's going to come up again. He's going to come up again in conversation when we get into my film stuff.
Oh, great. Yeah, so,
why are they doing this? Why?
Because they just can't leave well enough alone.
Schwarzenegger's coming back for it, too.
Is that even necessary? I mean, what is he going to do?
I think he'll probably... I think they said he's actually going to just play a human. In this
that, okay, I'd be all right if he's a Terminator. It's time to give it up, dude. You know, I mean, I saw Escape Plan with him and Sly, and I was like, you know, this movie might have been great like 30 years ago,
25 years ago.
You're right.
I enjoyed it, but
because
you know,
it's silly.
I got right, out of the it Red is Box just for $1.50.
It is just kind of one of those movies you watch and you're just like,
when you
those guys
do it like Grudge Match, because I didn't see the Escape Plan, but Grudge Match with the old dudes, it was kind
of
cute.
It was part of the story.
It was a part of the
old
story.
Yeah.
You know.
And that was kind of cool seeing Rocky fight.
I want to hear how the present Arnold Schwarzenegger Terminator is going to sound.
Yeah, so
creaky.
We've got that to look forward to. So
his new robot will be called WD-40.
Yeah. So we'll be at Comic-Con. Let me get out. Let me tell you some ticket prices because this.
Ticket prices for Comic-Con.
Yeah, they're but not. They're not, the pre-sale's over.
You what? Forgot to talk about our special guest.
I have
guest.
Not.
Forgot. Oh, you didn't
We're
forget.
We're
going to
get
okay.
to that. We're going to talk about
We're
that.
We're going
to
get there.
So if you want to go to Comic-Con, it's Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, the 14th through 16th at Bartle Hall. You can get a 3-day pass for an adult for $60. That'll get you into all 3 days.
Oh, that's it?
Friday only is $20. Saturday only is $35. Sunday only is $30. A youth pass is for 3 days, age 11, 15 is $20. 10 and under is free.
I can get in.
So
on the youth pass.
Yeah. But yes, like you said, we do have a special guest coming to join us. It's kind of a cool thing.
Yes.
Marlon Wayans.
That's right.
Is going to be in Kansas City this weekend.
He comes from Comedy's royal family, yeah. The Wayans.
The Wayans brothers. He's going to be in town promoting.
They have a sister. Don't play games.
Wayans brothers. Yes. Kim.
She was on In Living Color, wasn't she?
Yeah.
Yes, she was.
The Wayans. Yes. So they're not the Wayans. But there are the Wayans brothers. But there's Wayans sisters, too. So
that's right.
You know. All right. So, right. He's going to come and he's going to join us. He's going to come out to Comic-Con and sit on the floor with us and talk to us. Until he gets bored, I guess.
Until he gets bored.
So it's our job to keep Marlon Wayans entertained.
That's right. So he doesn't stomp off.
Right.
Not that that's his personality, stomping away or anything.
No. I'm sure it'll be fun. I think that's going to be great, kind of having all that going on around us. And, you know, it should be a lot of fun. So, yeah. So if you're going to be out at Comic-Con, come see us.
Is he as cute in person as he's been on screen
all
these years?
I'm
going to find out.
Here we go again.
I'm sorry. I won't flirt with him when the show begins.
Right. Right. Yeah. So, yeah. So, if you're out there, come join us. We're going to be out by the live performance stage on the middle of the floor. So,
I'm looking forward to it.
We'll have a big banner.
We will have a big banner. Tim, you rocked out on our banner. I love it. So, except you keep using these photos of me that are not flattering. I'll
tell you what.
Have you ever taken an unflattering photo? I don't believe that.
My daughter helped pick that Patrick. Picture because she liked your hat.
And she was wearing a hat similar to my hat in our photo. So yeah. I did think that.
She was wearing her TARDIS hat.
That's right. I saw the symmetry and I loved it.
So, yeah. So, well, you know, we only have so many pictures of us. I think we decided that was the.
We will be taking a photo today with our guest.
Yes, our guest.
Patrick Ray.
Let's
who
get
is,
going,
is that?
Ooh, who is Patrick Ray? Can it be philosophical?
Yeah.
Existential. But Patrick Ray is an Emmy Award-winning writer and director. Go ahead and list off a few of the films. We know him from Nailbiter, but he's done a ton of other...
Lots of short films.
Yeah, lots of short films.
Lots of shorts. Which of these are your pride and joys?
Well, it's funny because every one of them I love. Mm-hmm. You know, I would say Get Off My Porch is probably one of my favorites because it's the most... me out of all of them.
Get Off My Porch is a short film about the horrors of being stalked by Girl Scouts.
Girl Scouts who are obsessed with selling cookies. And yeah, it was shot, man, God, 2010, mm-hmm. 4 years ago.
It's pretty amazing.
Actually, it was shot in 2009 and then we finished in 2010. So it's been a long time. We shot it in like a very cold, Shawnee December.
Wow.
And yeah, you know, I like all my shorts. I just, there are a couple I like more than others and mm-hmm. stuff. But I got asked this weekend actually, because this guy goes, "You had a film get released through Lionsgate. Why the hell are you making short films still?" And I'm like, "Because I hate waiting between raising money for feature films. It takes forever." You know, we're in the process of raising money for our next movie. And I like to tell, and I really believe that some stories shouldn't be longer than 5 to 10 minutes.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you don't say to Stephen King, "Why are you writing short stories still? You wrote a novel."
Right.
You know, he still writes short stories because some stories are meant to be
shorter.
Short. So, yeah. And I also think that it keeps me from getting, you know, creaky and you know what I'm saying, like I keep,
you don't get rusty.
Exactly.
Get bored. I mean,
my crew gets to work on stuff. We made 7 short films last year, you know. And,
yeah,
and
they are a factory, but it's high quality product,
right? We do a really good job. And you know, and also you know, when we made Nailbiter, we had made all these short films before, so by the time we got to a feature, it was basically like, you know, extended short film,
yeah.
So everybody was understanding what, you know, everybody could read each other's minds and understand what, you know, what they wanted. I basically could communicate to my DP without, you know, even saying anything. I could just, I give him a look. He goes, "You want me to tilt down, don't you?" I'm like, "Yep, tilt down."
But, you know. So you pretty much have your crew that you work with.
Right, yeah, and we're consistent. We're constantly adding to the crew and meeting new people and stuff. Because, I mean, there's a lot of talented people in Kansas City. Sure. So.
And you are from Nebraska.
I am Schuyler. From Schuyler, Nebraska, yeah. Which is a town of about 4,000, 5,000 people. My graduating class was like less than 70 people. So they're like, "What did you do?" And I said, "Well, I watched a lot of movies, you know, and I acted them out in my backyard, and my neighbors thought I was insane."
Then you went to university.
I went to the University
Lawrence?
Of Kansas in Lawrence.
Mm-hmm. Rock Chalk.
I lived in Lawrence for 10 years.
Yeah.
And
nice.
Then before moving finally to the Kansas City area. And, you know, now I live in the Northland, and I'm finally a Missourian, too. I'm no longer on the Kansas side. Everybody's like, "Oh, you're a Kansas filmmaker." I'm like, technically, I'm a Missouri filmmaker.
Now. And you're also a father, a husband.
I am
and
a father. And we have her with us right now, sitting here at the table.
That's right.
I am trying to keep her occupied with Lunita's phone and puffs.
There
Lots
you go.
Lots of puffs. Like, one of the things I've learned over the last year is that your carpet will never be fully clean. It will always have puffs or something crunched into the.
Yes.
You're walking around and it's just, you know,
and
stepping
and
on them.
Juice.
Yeah, exactly. So, but you know, being a father is actually, it's interesting because I've been looking at some of the films we've been making lately, and a lot of them have to do with some form of parenting undertone, you know.
Yeah.
Well, I was going to ask you, you know, how has being a father changed your
a lot of them have had to deal with, you know, like, for instance, I Do, which we shot, which played in Omaha at the Omaha Film Festival, is about a girl who makes her last wish before the world comes to an end, and she's like 7 years old, and she decides to get married. That's her big wish. And then, of course, Good Conduct, which Michelle Davidson wrote, and it deals with a father and a son and meeting at a jail and having this conversation right before the dad's supposed to get out on parole. And so there's a lot of like parenting undertones.
Right.
And I'm not consciously doing that, you know. In fact, our next feature involves pregnancy. The big thing about it is pregnancy. And so mm-hmm. it's like, well, am I just.
And what is your next feature?
Right now, we're working on a movie called Enclosure, which we have. Some interest in, and possibly would be shooting. I want to shoot it here, but we might be shooting in Charleston.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of things.
North Carolina?
Yeah, there's a lot of things in right now that we're waiting on. So, mm-hmm. It's kind of a container horror movie, a lot like Nailbiter was, but mm-hmm. this one involves a tent, and there's this couple, this married couple, they're going out on a camping trip, and they camp right next to a group of rowdy hunters who are having kind of like a party. And one night the campsite with the hunters is attacked by what they think is a bear. So the husband is actually in the military, so he basically races out there to save the people, and he finds one survivor, and they drag that one hunter into the tent with them. And for some reason, whatever this thing is, it's a bear or whatever, they don't know for sure what it is, won't attack the tent. So right, so it's the three of them kind of positioned inside the tent. They don't know why the tent is so special. They don't know exactly what's keeping the creature from actually reaching inside the tent. And then, of course, as the story goes on, you start realizing that the guy they've saved isn't exactly the sweetest person in the world. So it becomes almost like, I would say, Hitchcock's Lifeboat, where it's like these characters that have to deal with each other in this small space, and they may not be... You know, one of them might be not who he says he is and stuff.
Sure.
So it's
that's how you get some good human drama, though.
Right.
Do you know yet when you're going to start production on it?
Well, you know, I keep hearing summer, and that's a really, you know, I could be June, July, August, you know. And so I'm hoping that's true.
Now, are you directing?
I'm directing. I am going to be directing. And Michelle Davidson and I wrote the screenplay, and we worked on it for like 2 years. And, yeah, so I'm hoping that we know soon, because I'm constantly scheduling short film projects along the way,
right,
and other things. And so it's like, what am I supposed to do for May if I'm supposed to be shooting? Because if we're shooting in June, that means May is going to be all prep.
Sure.
You know, if we shoot in July, that means June's all prep. So I'm kind of like trying to remain, you know, kind of loose to see what happens. And then, you know, there's a chance that it might get pushed in the fall. And so you just have to, you know, kind of just go with the flow.
So you and Lenita did a film together.
We did. End of December, early January.
That's right.
And Lenita came to me with this script. And I've had a lot of scripts sent to me in the last couple of years. And it's strangely enough, because I work in the horror genre, a lot of them are involved a torture and all this stuff like that. I'm like, why did you send this to me? So, you know, on occasion,
you think I am?
Yeah, right. I'm like, what is it about my previous work that would make you think I would want to make a movie about torture and rape? And I'm like, I just don't get it. So, she sent me the script, and I could see it visually. I could see it. So I was like, I definitely want to take this on. And we started working on it probably prepping it in December and shot it in January. It was pretty quick turnaround, too, because it was like we hit the ground running in December and we were wrapped by the end of the month.
Yeah.
And it was the first day of shooting we did at the Livestock Exchange Building. And it was the longest day of shooting I've ever had on one of my shoots.
Seriously?
True story, 18 hours.
Oh, wow.
Way to go, Lenita.
My bad.
No, it's okay. No, it was good. We basically did a 3-day shoot that we had to crush into 2 days, right, just because of availability of everybody and stuff. And so it was fine. And then we shot all the flashbacks or whatever the... Mm-hmm. Lenita, do you want to tell a little bit about the story? That way...
Please. Sure. We had a chance to watch it before. Josh and I got to see it, and it was your first time seeing this version.
This version, so,
yeah. It's going to continuously get better and better, because right now it's still in a rough cut form.
So. Well, that didn't have any sound. So.
Well, it looked good. Well, it did look good. Why don't you tell me what you thought about it? Don't, no spoilers.
Well,
but
Violet, what did you think of it?
I think that's about the only way to... It was beautiful looking. I mean, it was shot really well. I mean, I won't say anything about the story, because I think the short film, you want to keep all that. So I think I kind of got what was kind of going on. I mean, you know, just from watching it. And I think with a movie, if you can turn down the sound and still tell what's happening, that means you're telling a good story.
Right.
Nice.
So, and usually that's what I do, is I'll send a movie with no sound to people and see, just mute the dialogue. I did that with Counterparts. I'm like, okay. Counterparts is a short film we did in August, which actually has Lenita in it, and she's fantastic. She's wonderful in it. And the movie is already all over the film festival circuit, and it's winning awards and stuff, and it's doing really well. It's playing in Chicago next weekend. But it was one of those films where I showed it to people silent, and I'm like, okay, were you confused? And they were like, no, I followed it. I'm like, okay, good.
Yeah.
And that's usually, I mean...
That's a pretty big thing about a movie, is you don't have to listen to it. If you can take out the dialogue and people explaining what's happening, the pictures are still telling you.
Yeah, doing good, can't do that with a David Lynch movie, but you can do that.
Right.
You
know. Well, it's not always going to be the case, but
Dune is my all-time favorite.
That's my favorite David Lynch movie. It's in my top 20 movies ever.
Mm-hmm. Just top 20?
Probably.
But I think I have 50 movies in my top 20.
So. I always say, yeah, every now and then I'm like, I think that's in my top 20. And
what's your favorite movie? And I'm like, today?
Yeah.
You know, so... Yeah.
I think I told somebody yesterday that Road Warrior was in my top 20. They're like, well, your top 20,
just kinda, you just keep, you, you,
your
you
top 20 is like 100 movies.
Yeah, exactly. So,
But yeah, no, it was a lot of fun to shoot, and we had a really beautiful lead actress, Bailey. How do you say it?
Amethyst, maybe? I think it's Amethyst.
Yeah, and she was fantastic. And then we had Joseph Anderson, and we had some really fun Steadicam shots that we got in what's her name's house?
Marilyn Hall's house.
Mm-hmm. You know, whenever I'm shooting a movie, getting a location is the hardest part for me because you don't want to ever feel like you're a prisoner in your own set.
Right.
And you're usually, you know, it's a home invasion whenever
And let's not forget, we have a third character, Jeffrey Staub.
Jeffrey Staub, yes.
He saved our hiney pants.
Yeah, because we didn't cast that until like that week.
Yeah.
You know, and because it was a part that kind of made people feel a little uncomfortable. But he did a fantastic.
So sexy. I hope it's okay I say that about you, Jeff.
Anita, you're...
I mean, well, the role called for someone to be kind of sexy and a little menacing, and he got the script, and I think we shot it like 2 days later or something like that.
Yeah.
And
he walked in and nailed it. Yeah, and I was very happy. I had been wanting to work with him for a while because I've seen a lot of other independent films around town, but
he's one of the hardest working Kansas City actors.
On the second day, we had the camera break for 3 hours. That was an interesting day. But yeah, it was a really good shoot, and it didn't take me very long to edit the film. I usually cut the films myself, so right now we've got my composer Julian Bickford working on the score, and he's working at it out of his own house right now we're moving right along with it. Right now we're working on effects because the last shot has got some effects, and I'm still not quite sure
How we're gonna make it,
but we're gonna make it work.
Well, I mean, you know, what happened was my sister and I, we were contemplating starting a film production company together, and she and I had done some projects together before, and she thinks I'm a work Nazi, so she's just like, I need a detox from you, and she, you know, has explained to me that she's an introvert and I'm too demanding. I'm not sure, but she and I are really good. That's my baby sister. But I think she's kind of like, we're going to have to see if we can work together. And I said, okay, fine. But I had written this script so that she and I could learn how to make films together.
Right.
And then, so we were going to seek funding, and I went to Patrick and I said, hey, can you read this script and tell me how much a film like this might cost? And he got back to me and he was like, it's going to cost this much. When are we going to make it? And yeah, I was like, right.
Yeah.
That made my day. My dreams are manifesting.
I've been doing a lot of horror films lately, and the last bunch that I've done, I mean, last year I did 7 shorts and only one of them was a horror film, so I'm trying to like branch out, and you know, the two that were in Omaha this weekend were both dramatic pieces and stuff, so it's like I'm trying to find stuff that scares me a little bit, you know? I was like, all right, how the hell am I going to do this?
So what about...
Well, that's the only way to really grow as a filmmaker, is to do something that you're really not... You know, to tackle a subject that you have to really put yourself into and not just kind of go through the motions, because that's what's going to happen. You do horror movies all the time. Vincent's like, yeah, you know, kind of like we did in that other movie.
Right. I have yet to do a romantic comedy, but, you know, it's one of those things where right now I'm just trying some new stuff. I am, however, shooting a film in 2 weeks that is a little bit more in my wheelhouse, which is, ironically, it's for Michael Biehn's company, who played Kyle Reese in Terminator.
Yeah.
So... He gets Final Cut, according to my contract.
Nice.
Funny. But it's a short film involving 4 elderly people trapped in an elevator. They're on their way to their 50th class reunion, and they're stuck in this elevator together. So I've got like Kip Niven and Joyce Appel and some fun actors. Nice. I have Victor Wexler, a new guy here in town. And one of them forgets to take their meds, and then it becomes a horror movie.
Then nice.
I'm hopefully And she's excited about it as well. Very excited. She's probably going to be on set for some of it because she's like the mascot. Anyway, and so we're hopefully going to be shooting at the Screenland Crossroads. They have a huge elevator there. So hopefully that's where we're going to shoot. It's always interesting because it's like you always have to have a backup plan for locations because there's always a chance it's going to fall through at the last minute.
It's hard you don't want to get with one place because it may not be the place.
Exactly. It's just one of those things where I've been in a situation where I've had to have a backup plan for a location at the last minute. So I've kind of gotten the habit of doing that. So I'll have to look for a backup elevator in case the other one falls through.
Well,
I'm going to look. I'm going to look at...
Yes, come see
me. Z-Strike.
Come see us. In terms of upcoming Patrick Ray, so you have the short and Enclosure.
I have the short, I have Enclosure, then I've got it. Like I've just got like a slate of projects that I'm working on right now. I want to do a sequel to Nailbiter because we ended it with a kind of like a we'll see you next time.
A cliffhanger.
Yeah, right. And I've got people who are like, okay, for the love of God, you have to follow it up with it. So I've got the script, and I'm probably gonna, now that the script is written, pass it on to Michelle for rewrites, polishes, and all that.
So Michelle is your producing partner.
Yeah, she writes most of the scripts I write. I co-write with her. Mm-hmm. The elevator script is one I've written by myself. But Counterpart, she co-wrote with me. She wrote Good Conduct entirely. There's a short film that I did called The Hourglass Figure, which is circulating on the.
It's incredible.
And she's the star of it, and she co-wrote that with Amber Rapp. I kind of gave him the idea. I said, here's the premise, go with it. She's probably the easiest person I've collaborated with in terms of writing.
And Michelle Davison, she is the co-host of Kansas City Live.
Which
she is one
she?
Of the same. She's the girl.
Oh, yeah, Michelle, yeah.
Yes.
Well, Michelle, Michael.
Right.
Eminem.
I can see her.
Eminem.
They're both blonde.
And then Amber Rapp is the current president of Kansas City Women in Film and Television. She's an incredible writer. That woman is tiny, but she's filled to the brim with imagination.
Yes. So, yeah, those are the projects I have currently, and I'm hoping. I've got one in October that I'm doing in Hot Springs, Arkansas. That is going to be a lot of fun. Involves we're shooting it inside of an airplane, hopefully, because it takes place inside of an airplane. It's called Cabin Pressure, and so we're hopefully going to get that one off the ground very very soon. There's going to be an Indiegogo that the actress who's we have a lady who is in Halloween 5 she's playing the lead and she's playing the flight attendant. And the basic premise is that there's this flight, late night flight, that this guy's basically gotten a seat on, but it's actually a flight for werewolves.
And then, I love it.
And then, as they're changing with the full moon, instead of the masks that come down, they're like chains to chain them up to make sure they don't.
Oh, nice.
And then he's just kind of sitting there. And, yeah, it's pretty fun. So we'll see how it all turns out.
And you're just writing this?
Well, no, I'm directing too. I wrote it specifically because I went to the Hot Springs Horror Film Festival last year, and I met the lady running it, and I said, I'm going to write something for you. So what I've been doing lately is making specific short films, either for writers or for actresses. Like the lead actress in Counterparts came to me, and she's like, I really want something to put on my reel.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So we basically collaborated on an idea, and I wrote the script, and then she,
he's talking about Samaya Finley.
Samaya Finley.
She's in town, comes to like Casey Wift meetings, and she's like, "I'm an actress, and I want to start working." And next thing I know, she's in a Patrick Ray film. She's starring in a Patrick Ray film as two sisters.
Yeah, she plays twins. I said, okay, so what we're going to do is she really wants something that shows some range. So I'm like, all right, well, in that case, I'm going to write two parts for you.
Right.
And, and show some different, perspectives on your abilities and stuff. And she's, so it's circulating.
She's incredible.
Yeah, she does
a
really nice job.
And that was one thing I was going to say to you, Patrick, is I read a little bit of our French review for Good Conduct. I mean, not Good Conduct.
Counterparts
here on the show. It was awesome.
Yeah.
My French is amazing.
Oh, you were able to interpret it.
No.
No.
She's just right. So somebody who can understand Lanita's...
Patrick is a hack.
Attempt it.
He is a le hack.
I think we determined that it might have been good.
It was a good... It was, because somebody actually posted underneath it. And actually, I was able to find some way of translating it, on the web.
Did you copy and paste a lot?
But no, I didn't do that. No. I looked at it. The word good was in there several times, so I was like, okay.
Okay.
Yeah, I think that's what we did. Sounds good. That's good.
I think this is a positive review.
Yeah. So I think one of the things I'm going to be focusing on very soon, besides because I've got my feature projects and my short project, but also is reaching out to actresses in the area and seeing if they'd be interested in, or writers for that matter, in, making a 2-minute short film, shoot for one day, and basically treat it as if, I don't know how much is spent on headshots and getting their reels cut, but it'd be interesting to make a micro short for each actor to show what they can do and actually have a film that they can circulate on film festivals to show their acting ability.
That's a good idea.
And they offer that as kind of a service.
Yeah.
How much would a service like that cost?
Well, that's what I'm figuring out right now, because it can't be too low and it can't be too high. It's got to be, and it's got to be one of those things where obviously everybody's getting paid for that one day of shooting. And the actresses then we edit the film and we get it scored and then we give it to them and they can do whatever they want with it.
Yeah, that's phenomenal. And for them to be able to have material,
right? That's kind of what I'm thinking. It could probably be a scale thing where they can do a 1-day shoot or they can do a 2-day shoot or they can do a 3-day shoot depending on what range they would want to go.
That's a really good idea, because I think probably when actors are auditioning now, it probably helps to have something a little bit more like that
to show,
than just a
I know it's awful hard for a lot of actresses to get the material they need rounded up for their reel sometimes, because I'm guilty of it as a director. It's like, hey, can you send me that film I was in? I'm like,
and if you don't know somebody, headshots can be very expensive.
Very expensive.
So
very expensive.
And a lot of people, that can be just something that talks somebody out of doing it.
This is almost like a moving headshot.
Yeah, I think that's a great idea. Do you want to give out any contact information to anybody who might want to
look me up on Facebook? Because surprisingly, I get a lot of contacts from Facebook, and so Patrick Ray, look me up, REA on Facebook, and I'm always online. I may not respond, but I'm always online. So, a lot of the film festivals that I've gotten into I've met the people through Facebook. So it's pretty amazing.
And now before we kind of move on with our show here, I wanted to. As a filmmaker here in Kansas City, what kind of advice would you give somebody who's listening to the show that's, maybe kind of at that, college age?
Sure.
That's trying to figure out how to do this? Because I know a lot of people that I've talked to, they're trying to go big, instead of just finding work here,
Right. So. And it's funny that you mentioned that, because I had the same question on a panel yesterday at the Omaha Film Festival. I always tell aspiring filmmakers, make some short films, go out there and make your mistakes on something small. Because if you try to go out there and make your Bible epic, you try to make a Noah's Ark movie immediately out of the gate, it could be potentially embarrassing, because you're going to be making a lot of first-timer mistakes.
Yep.
So I think that learn from the short films before making a feature film. And I know a lot of people that are like, no, I'm going right for the feature. And it's like, that can be tricky, because,
the question I get is always, how do I get money?
Yes, Patrick, how do I get money?
Oh, my God. I mean, right, that's like the number, and it's just like, you need a lot of
money. I'm still trying to figure that out. I've been doing this now for 12 years, and every time I do it, I'm like, okay, so, all right, now I got to figure this out. It's, I always tell people that I put out 10 fishing poles into the lake and see which one starts moving. Right now I've got a couple people interested in enclosure, and I'm like, all right, guys, first one to the finish line with money wins, and that's kind of – and you can sit there – you could spend years trying to – with Nailbiter, we started looking for the money in 2007, and we didn't even start shooting until 2009. And then we, ran out of money halfway through, had to stop shooting, and we picked it up again in 2010. And so you just got to really commit. And you got to find something. I always tell people, find something you really, really don't mind being stuck with for 6 years. Because ultimately, you're the one who's got to keep everybody excited about it. And if you're not excited about it from the get-go, then you're going to be in trouble. Because movies just – feature films take a lot of time if you're not doing a movie that has a release date before you start – the script.
Well, and if you're a first-time filmmaker, it's
right
to go into. There's so many things that you learn. Even in, I don't care how many Quentin Tarantino movies you've watched, or how many just bonus features on DVDs and Blu-rays you've watched. You don't know anything until you actually get behind the camera and onto a set,
right,
and go through the process from start to finish.
I know a lot of people that are like, "Well, I learned my film school from watching DVD extras and this and that," and I'm like, "But it's all about relationships, mm-hmm, and making relationships and being, you know, like learning how to work with other people and collaborate with other people." Because I think that sometimes some of the mistakes beginners make is they decide to do everything themselves.
Yeah.
And you got to learn that, you know, you got to find somebody who's good at sound. You got to find somebody who's good at, you know, lighting. And it's almost like the second you figure that out and you create a team, you're going to be better off. Because right, if you try to do everything yourself, it's going to end up, you'll burn out too. It's just too much.
Yeah. And what I tell people is, you know, IFC meetings Wednesday nights at the Westport Coffee House is a great way to just go in and just meet some people.
Well,
there's always somebody there with a project you need help on. You're not going to be able to go and direct the first movie. Maybe you can, maybe you can't.
Right.
But even just getting your foot in there.
Go to local screenings. Where, like, when there's a feature film that's been made here locally, go to the screenings and meet people, because a lot of the people who are making movies are at those screenings.
Yeah.
And just go out. Like, the thing is that now the cameras are a little bit more accessible than ever before.
Yeah.
So people have DSLRs. You know, you don't necessarily have to rent a camera. Yeah. You can borrow it.
Ask people, you know, for equipment.
What it comes down to is story, ultimately. And I think a lot of people, like, they want to just go out and shoot a car chase. And ultimately, you gotta tell a good story. And I always tell people that sound is the most important part.
Yeah, it really is. That's
because if you're watching, you know, I always tell Paranormal Activity, for instance, not going to win any cinematography awards because it just looks like surveillance footage.
Sure.
But the sound is amazing.
Yeah,
and that is what scares people, is the sound.
Absolutely. You're
so
right,
so if you're watching, you know, Lawrence of Arabia and everything is, you can't get into it, you know, even though it's the most beautiful image you'll ever see.
And speaking of sound, we want to thank Josh Wise and his ponytail for being here again today.
Wow.
I love his hair. He's got great hair. And Josh is our sound guy.
Josh Wise, yeah. The man behind the Tim and Lo Show, the one that makes it happen for us.
That's right.
Yeah.
Okay, so are we wrapping up with Patrick Ray talking about personal projects? We're going to get into...
We're going to talk about some spring movies here if you want to stick around.
Okay.
Stick around with us. Let us know what you're looking forward to seeing.
So, yeah.
Nymphomaniac. I'm looking forward to that movie.
Thanks for coming in. We really do appreciate it. It's good to have.
It's a Lars von Trier movie.
Yeah. Nymphomaniac. That should be interesting.
It's out. I think it's out on VOD now.
Is it already?
Yeah.
Shia LaBeouf.
Baby wants her papa.
So, all right. So, we'll just kind of jump through a few weeks here in March and April and kind of see what's coming out. You know, 300 obviously is the first. This was the first weekend of what was generally considered the spring.
Spring,
movie.
So Mr. Peabody and
so
300,
Peabody and
Rise
300
of an Empire
kicked it off. This week we have Need for Speed coming up.
Oh, nice.
Do you know anything about Need for Speed?
I don't know anything.
It's based on a video game.
That,
one of those car driving video games.
The one that you sit down in and drive, that video game?
Yeah, like in bars and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's...
And Aaron Paul starring in it. Did you watch Breaking Bad?
No.
So he was Jesse Pinkman on Breaking Bad. So, yeah. And this, you know, I kind of wish I could just pretend like this is what happened to Jesse.
I usually feel good because things...
Breaking Bad. I think that's the only way I can get through this movie.
Things that I say I haven't watched, Josh also hasn't watched. But you actually watched Breaking Bad?
Yep.
Oh.
Yeah. Breaking Bad was a good show. Yeah.
I loved it.
Yeah.
Okay. It's in my queue.
Netflix. It's a good show to binge watch. I think that's the best way to watch that show because I didn't watch it all the way through, like when it was on. I think the weeks in between would have driven me crazy.
So it's good.
Just because, man, it was such an unpredictable show. Because, you know, you watch a show and, you know, based on normal archetypes in television and movies, what characters, you know, their rise and fall and how they're going to go, you can usually predict it. Breaking Bad, those characters hardly ever did what you thought they were going to do or should do. And sometimes it was like maddening. It was like, oh my God, what is wrong with these people? So, but that's what makes it so good. It was great. I mean, powerful acting, great writing. I mean, Vince Gilligan on that show was amazing. So.
And so. Yeah.
So now we have him and, you know, so we don't go off on a.
The main guy?
Well, it's not Bryan Cranston. It's Aaron Paul, the younger guy. Yeah. Yeah. His little.
Sidekick?
Partner.
Yeah.
Yeah, sidekick. They were up and down. Watch it. Just watch it.
Will do.
So we got that coming out this week. Also, Tyler Perry's The Single Moms Club.
I am excited about this freaking movie.
Are you?
So excited.
It won't screen for us.
Yeah.
Tyler Perry doesn't screen.
He disappoints in that regard because some of the critics are fans, and he should take his blows with everybody else.
It kind of reminds me of the Kevin Smith thing, where it's like, you know what, you're not making, a guy like that's not making movies for critics. He's making movies for the people who are fans of the show. Like Kevin Smith, you know, made his Mallrats and Clerks and
Sure,
Chasing
those
Amy.
Are clearly
and
not
And then
for
he
critics.
Kind of, he tried to branch out, and people kind of, you know, he got bad reviews, and I'm making Clerks 3, and then I'm done with feature filmmaking. You know, and it's just like, who are you making movies for, bro? If you're gonna,
right?
You know, if you're giving up because you're getting bad reviews, I mean, you know, and that's a guy like Tyler Perry. He makes movies for his fans, not critics. So.
But he's got to understand that he's not just a filmmaker. He is a studio owner.
True.
He is not just a studio head. He built it from the ground up. He needs to get with the program, and film critics are a part of that.
Yep.
I mean, and in saying that, I'm angry because I want to see reviews. Single Moms Club for free. I'm just saying.
It's for free. I don't want to
pay. No. I mean, I would pay to see this one, actually. It looks really good. I mean, I do wonder how his fans will feel now that he's doing a multiracial cast.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It should be interesting to see how that plays out because his movies usually have a decent weekend. I mean, so.
Yeah. I'm excited.
All right, March 14th, we've got the big movie that weekend is Veronica Mars movie. Did you watch Veronica Mars? Anybody?
It got a movie.
Yeah.
Is that a good thing?
Yeah. Did you watch that, Patrick? No. Yeah. See, me neither. I didn't watch Veronica Mars. It wasn't for me.
It was for teenage, right?
Yeah.
Right?
You know, so. They started a Kickstarter a couple years ago, got this movie made, and now they're
that, coming out.
Kristen
girl,
Bell?
Yeah, she was on Veronica. She was Veronica Mars.
She's in, I mean, it's got the cast coming back.
Oh, okay.
But it's kind of just seems one of those where it's a movie aimed at like a small, specific audience.
That doesn't
really
include
isn't,
me.
I don't, yeah, it doesn't include me. I mean,
or any of my children.
Am I going to have to watch this show to get this movie? I mean, I don't know.
I don't know.
So anyway, so if you're into Veronica Mars, there's a movie coming out March 14th.
And two big ones.
What?
The one that my daughters will slit my throat in my sleep if I don't take them to see, Divergent.
Ah, that's March 21st. Divergent, yeah.
Yes.
I don't know. Are you going to go see that when it screens?
Absolutely. And I'm taking my daughters because they've read all of the books and they literally will say, hey, I just finished this book, get me the next one. And I'm like,
I was wondering what Kate Winslet was doing in that movie.
Kate Winslet?
Yeah.
It's going to be big. She's making money.
But is it going to be good?
Well, if it's anything like the Skeleton Bones adaptation?
Beats me. They've got a lot of those little teen books.
Yeah,
teen
the last teen books that I saw adapted to screen. Mortal Instruments. I was very disappointed and saddened. And Sigourney Weaver is supposed to be in the sequel, the Mortal Instruments sequel. And I am like, don't do it. Don't go from Working Girl, which was amazing, to this crap storm.
Like almost 30 years ago.
I mean, well, you know, Ghostbusters.
No, oh, yeah. She's solid.
Yeah,
I'm not knocking.
Yeah, her. Sigourney Weaver is amazing. And she was in a film, I forget the name of it, recently with
Avatar.
De Niro.
I don't know. Oh, yeah.
The psychic film.
Yeah, I haven't seen it.
I did see it. I liked
The Red
Red Lights. I was underwhelmed by Red Lights, but she was
That's
good at it.
That's why we have Patrick here today.
Yeah, he knows everything. I am literally asleep.
All right. Also, March 21st, Muppets Most Wanted.
Muppets Most Wanted.
Muppet movie. Coming up also in March. And this is something I'd like to see. This The Raid. Has anybody seen The Raid? It's coming. Oh, yeah. Yeah, the sequel. Is it great? I've heard this is like an amazing movie.
The first one's great.
Yeah. So there's a sequel
Yeah, The Raid.
Out.
That's the one that played at Sundance, right?
Yeah.
The second one, yeah.
Yeah, I did. I heard it was exactly like the first one. But I didn't see it, so that's not a formal review.
Sure. Sabotage, also, that's another Schwarzenegger.
How do you feel about Noah?
Where was it? Yeah, Noah, yeah, that was going to be my... Yeah, that's the same week as Sabotage. Noah, I don't know.
Don't know. I know. I mean, it's got...
it looks like a spectacle. I mean,
the most famous Australian.
I don't know what I'm going to try to get out of it. I'm not an overly religious person, although I was raised Catholic, so I'm not going to get... I'm not going to be one of those people who picks it apart if it's... I mean, you know,
if it's not,
Christian groups are freaking out, and they have to put a disclaimer at the start of this movie that it's not a direct telling of the Bible, and it's a fictionalized Hollywood version of the story.
Which is so rude.
Just really? People can't figure that out for themselves. So, you know, so... I don't know. I guess it looks like it might be interesting. It's got a weird cast.
Yeah. Emma Watson. Yeah, it's
and there's like a war going on or something. Like
a war?
A bunch of guys pick a fight with Noah while he's building this.
Right,
know.
And he sets fires. Is that what I'm seeing?
It matters. It's like Titanic. As long as that lasts 15 minutes, 20 minutes, half hour, whatever is good, and the flood comes and there's lots of destruction and it's whatever. I guess you know.
I know.
It's coming out in March though. And I think when you look at a movie like that coming out so early, it's just like, why is that coming out in March and not May?
Right. Not in
you know,
the
is it trying
blockbuster.
To hit that big weekend before the other movies that would normally kick its ass are going to come out. I don't know.
Yeah. I'm going to have to hold. I'm going to reserve my opinion of Noah till after I see it. The trailer.
I mean, the trailer doesn't have me excited. I'm not like, ooh,
yeah,
the Noah movie.
It doesn't have me excited, but it looks like it could be awesome, but it also looks like it could be just terrible.
All right, now April has the movie that I'm most excited about.
And
Captain
what?
America, the Winter Soldier.
Captain America, the Winter Soldier.
Yeah.
The Avengers. Ready.
Cap was one of my favorites growing up when I was little. So.
And what's that actor's name?
Chris Evans.
He's hot.
Yeah, I figured you were going. I figured that's where this is going.
He is. I mean, and he's worked very hard to be. But let me tell you, I did not fall in love with him until I saw him in that terrible movie that I love so much. I do love it. With, oh God, I'm going to have to Google this one because it's the one about having too many sex partners.
What's your number? With Anna Faris.
I fell in love with him then and only then.
For me, it was Sunshine. The Danny Boyle movie, Sunshine. Haven't seen it. You got to see that. Do you like Danny Boyle?
Who is that?
Who is that? He won an Academy Award a couple of years ago.
For what?
Lenita, you're putting me on the spot.
I'm sorry. Yes, I like
Slumdog
Danny.
Millionaire.
I like Danny Boyle.
Yeah. All right. So we went for Slumdog Millionaire. But Sunshine's where they send the ship up to drop the nuke into the sun to restart the sun because the sun's dying out. It's a badass movie. Have you seen it?
I haven't. I want to.
Oh, it's a
Josh also has not seen Sunshine. I want to make that clear.
I love it. It's my favorite Danny Boyle movie. So.
Is it? Okay, I will see Sunshine. Just make me a list. I have a list from you and Stephen Wallace Pruitt, who is another local genius of a filmmaker. He and his wife, Mary Settle Pruitt, they are a filmmaking duo. And he's just made me a list of movies that I must see.
So, all right. So, let's move on.
Okay.
So, there are a lot of movies you need to see.
There are a ton of movies that I need to see.
Also, in April, Draft Day is the next one from Ivan Reitman. And we'll talk about Harold Ramis here in just a minute.
Okay.
So, it's a good segue, kind of. Draft Day is about the NFL draft. Kevin Costner plays the GM of a Cleveland Browns or something, and they've got to have a good draft or he's getting fired. stuff like that. Oculus is a horror movie that's coming out. Rio 2, an animated movie. Those come out April 11th. April 18th, Haunted House 2. There's Marlon Wayans' movie that's coming out.
Very exciting.
We're going to talk to him.
You know, here's the thing. I looked at the trailer for Haunted House 2, and I'm actually kind of excited about it.
Well, you know, the thing is they're not movies that anybody's ever going to tell you is a great movie.
Of course.
And he co-writes this movie. He knows when he's sitting down to write. I'm not writing Shakespeare here.
Sure.
I'm not going for the Academy Award. No. So, but you write jokes, again, for your fans. Mm-hmm. You know, he has his style of humor, and he has his fans that love that. And so you don't go into a movie like this going, oh, so disappointed by it. You know what you're getting into.
Yeah.
They're making fun of those found footage,
Paranormal Activity movies. Also, what was that movie? Because I didn't see it, and I wanted to see it because the sexy dude from A Gifted Man, I think is the name of the TV show. It was canceled, but I watched the entire first season, and it was a haunted house based. I think it was based on a true story.
Patrick Wilson.
Yes, and what was the movie that I think he was the one that was recently in this movie? It was a horror film.
Conjuring.
The Conjuring.
Yeah, he's been in a couple of horror movies lately. He wasn't in Sinister, but he was in.
That I wanted to see the movie because it looked like it was going to be badass, but too scary for my threshold. I'm not going to lie. Yeah. I'm kind of a punk.
I
had nightmares for, like, seriously, I'm not joking, for 2 weeks after I saw World War Z, and that was Zombies Light.
Yeah, I like that one. So there's our spring movie preview. Hit us up on Facebook, on Twitter. Let us know what you were excited about.
That's right.
Captain America is going to blow everybody away.
Captain America is going to blow everybody away. So. But I want to see the Grand Budapest Hotel.
Yeah, that's coming out too. That's a good one. Who's the filmmaker there? Wes Anderson?
Wes Anderson.
Yeah.
Wes Anderson.
Have you seen it yet?
Not yet,
it's screened once here.
I'm seeing it next week. Definitely.
I'm excited about that. I did like Moonrise Kingdom quite a bit.
Yeah.
His movies can be really hit and miss with people. I mean, you either like his movies or you just don't. I mean, So there's our spring movie preview. Two weeks ago when we had our last show, right after we left here, we found out that Harold Ramis died.
Yeah.
Children of the 80s, Harold Ramis was a huge part of both of our lives. I know growing up, his movies, from his performance in like Stripes and, you know, he co-wrote Ghostbusters. He wrote and directed Caddyshack. He's been either a writer and director.
It's my favorite.
A ton of amazing comedies, you know, and he passed away. And
he started out in Second City, right?
Yeah. So let me pull up my...
That's pretty cool. And, I mean, Caddyshack was the first duty joke that stuck with me.
It's still one of the ones that just works, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, the Baby Ruth, right? Because that was one of those where you're watching, you're like, oh, my God. Bill Murray, dude.
He's amazing.
He's amazing, yeah.
And then Ghostbusters. Ghostbusters 2, I loved Ghostbusters 2.
I loved Ghostbusters 2 when it came out, you know, when I was a kid and I was kind of, oh, the sequel, finally, you know, and Bobby Brown and all the music was in it, you know.
Exactly.
It was
just,
but now, you know.
And Superman was in it, wasn't he? Wasn't, oh my gosh, Christopher Reeves. I was going to say Keanu Reeves.
He was not in Ghostbusters.
Yes.
2.
Yes. He was on a bicycle. He was riding.
Did he have like some cameo?
Yeah.
If that's true, then I've totally missed that.
Yeah. He was playing himself. He was riding a bike through Central Park or something like that.
I didn't know that.
Okay. Yeah. That was Ghostbusters 2.
Look at Lenny
right?
to school me a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Yeah. So Ghostbusters, what do you think about doing Ghostbusters 3? Are you down with it? It's happening
without him.
Yeah, why wouldn't it?
Because he is Ghostbusters.
I know, but you know the thing about Ghostbusters is it's the story I think that can be told without, without the main players. I mean, you know, you're gonna have to have younger guys anyway being the.
I mean, I used to watch the cartoon.
hopefully this maybe gives Bill Murray a little poke. Maybe he'll get involved, because that's been the thing about getting the movie made is one day Bill Murray wants to do it, next day he doesn't, next day he does. And the thing about Bill Murray is if they just started filming the goddamn movie, he'd show up.
Right.
And cause you don't tell Bill Murray when to be somewhere. Bill Murray wants to be somewhere, he'll be there when he's there. So,
yeah. Okay.
He's had some, you know, a great influence on
the best movie, Groundhog Day.
Absolutely. Another movie that you can just watch over and over again.
Which is great
because it's about something that happens over and over
again. Right.
So it's a great movie. Groundhog Day, I think, is TNT, one of those stations, plays it.
Yeah.
On a constant loop, kind of
routinely.
Like a Christmas Story.
Yeah.
Yeah, another great movie and another Bill Murray movie that's, I mean, you know, one of those movies you just can't imagine anybody else playing that part. And
Analyze This and Analyze That. I loved those. I mean, gangster movie, Light.
I liked the first one more than the second one. I thought
yeah,
the second
of course.
One was the making the same jokes again.
Sure.
You know, but
I'm a huge De Niro fan.
Yeah, and I like De Niro doing comedy. I think he's one of those guys that can be a total badass, but he's absolutely hilarious because he is such a badass.
Yeah.
So when he's funny, it's just like, you know, you're laughing at him like, am I supposed to laugh at you? Are you going to hurt me if I laugh at you?
I think he's just funny. He's
got good comic timing.
I mean, but he's scary too. De Niro is one of the greatest actors to ever grace the screen. He's beautiful and gifted.
De Niro's a badass.
Yeah. I love De Niro. I did not, you know, I didn't think that I would like gangster films, but he sold me.
Did you see the one he just did, The Family?
I didn't see that one yet, but
it wasn't very good, but there's some good De Niro jokes because he's kind of playing a caricature of, you know, roles he's played in the past. So there's some good jokes. He sits down with Tommy Lee Jones. They're somewhere and like they're going to screen Goodfellas.
Nice.
And so, you know, there's.
So is that how you do it when you get of a certain age? The way to keep working is to make fun of yourself, to make fun of your.
I think
youth?
For every actor, it's important to not take yourself seriously.
Well, of course.
And I think you have to be able to make fun of yourself, maybe not spoof yourself. You know, I don't think that's something you have to do as an actor, but I think you need to be able to do it. And I mean, in today, anyway, entertainment industry, spoofs are all, you know, everybody's spoofing everybody now. So you have to be able to deal with it, I think. So yeah. But Harold Ramis, you know, I thought it was important we talk about him.
Yeah.
You know, we already talked about him once, but when, yeah, they said something about him at the Oscars. That was just a great moment. So,
agreed.
He will be missed. You know, I like just when he popped in little roles, you know, like in Knocked Up, he played Seth Rogen's dad.
Right.
I mean,
exactly.
That was just, you know, we're watching, you're like, that's great casting.
I mean, and he was just incredibly blessed, very talented, but he was also lucky. I mean, he got to have a writing career. He wrote for television, he wrote for screen, and he acted. For those of us, who find it hard to break into the business, but then to see someone who had such an involved influence on Hollywood is inspirational, I think, his life is and his work and the reach of his work and all that it encompassed is inspiring. So.
Well, you know, and if you're listening to this and you're thinking, why are you making such a big deal about Harold Ramis? Go watch some of his movies. I mean, if you're asking that question, then you haven't seen enough of them to understand.
Mm-hmm.
Caddyshack is, well, I mean, that has to be one of the most highly quoted movies, excuse me, ever.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, Ghostbusters the same way, Stripes, so. Yeah, so I think we're ready to wrap it up. What do you think?
Yeah, because I think we lost our guest. He had to carry his baby. She said, you know what?
Yeah.
Forget your little show now. I am the queen bee. And I said, she's right.
Yeah.
She's a gorgeous little thing.
She is. Little cutie. What's going on in KC this week?
Things going on in KC.
Anything? What's going on here at the Alamo Draft?
Anything local. That's a good question. I know that you mentioned the IFC.
Yeah. If you're into filmmaking and you're looking for a way to kind of just crack into it somehow here in Kansas City, there's a lot of amazing filmmakers. You know, Patrick Ray, Michelle Davidson. We've talked about a lot of them today. But just go to the IFC meetings. Yeah, I'm not getting anything either. IFC meets on Wednesday nights at 7 o'clock at the Westport Coffee House most nights. But you're always going to find somebody there you can join, or you can just show up.
Yeah, I mean, you
don't have
to
pay anything. They're always screening something. They're
screening something.
Trying to get people for projects. They're always doing fun little contests.
Destin Adair is the new president over there at IFC KC, and they've got, what is that cutie's name? I can't believe Jordan. What's Jordan's last name? The cutie that's the publicist for the IFC KC right now. Oh, she's so sweet, and I'm trying to think of her last name, but she...
Williams.
Is it?
I think so.
Jordan Williams, and she's on her job, and she's sending out these updates to keep everybody involved. Get on their email list. They have classes that they do. They are transforming the IFC KC and bringing back to, you know, what made it such a resource for burgeoning and aspiring Kansas City filmmakers. So definitely get
involved.
If you're
looking to get your foot in the door, that's really the best way to get started. Even just to learn anything is just go and just sit down and listen to people. You know, there's a lot of those kids up there are great. So I gotta get out of here and go to class. So we're gonna let you go for episode 5 of the Tim and Lo Show. This is 5 episodes in.
Yeah, I thought you were telling me you were gonna let me go sleep. So you're gonna go to class?
Yeah, I gotta go to class.
I'm gonna take a nap,
and then we're gonna get ready for next weekend.
I'm excited.
We're gonna have a big show next week, Saturday at Comic Con. If you're there, come see us. We'll be out there at 11:30 talking to Marlon Wayans.
Marlon Wayans,
pretty cool.
I'm excited.
All right, so thanks for tuning in at the Tim and Lo Show on Twitter, facebook.com/Tim and Lo on Facebook, the Tim and Lo Show at gmail.com. Hit us up. Let us know what you think. We'd love to hear from you. So
that's right. And always listen up, because we're going to get you some entertainment passes. And
yeah, we just gave away passes to
Mr. Peabody
and
Sherman.
Everybody enjoyed it. So
that's right.
We had a lot of good feedback from that. So listen up. Thank you for listening if you are. And until next week, see you later and peace out.
Peace.